WhiteRabbitRadio.net, and this is H. Avenger, and this is Horace the Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit, of course, and we're starting an exclusive interview series. And the first interview of me and Truck Roy will be talking with is the famous Beefcake from Beefcake's Boot Camp. Any of you who have been surfing that massive and growing pro-white website called White Genocide Project have noticed that there's a boot camp you can attend for free, and it'll get you into shape on how to war with the anti-whites. Beefcake, are you there?
Beefcake is with us.
All right. What's going on over at White Genocide Project?
Well, there's news articles coming up every single day. We've got good people writing them that we point out a lot of anti-whiteism in the news, basically. And we also have up every single month there is, for our stalwarts, we have a petition that's up every single month where there are several of them on the White House's front page because they put up this wonderful billboard for us to use to see if we can get enough people to sign so that the president can address on live TV white genocide. Now, so far we haven't had enough signatures on that to actually get it on TV, but fortunately it's a nice billboard to keep the message about white genocide up there. So yeah. That's going on there every month, and we also have articles. We're constantly hitting the message, always talking about white genocide and tying it all back to white genocide.
Yes, I'm over at the site right now. It's certainly a very fast-growing site, and we carry a lot of articles. I carry them on Twitter. I carry different of the pictures on Twitter, and as well as I carry the articles directly on WhiteRabbitRadio.net. We're always putting them up from time to time. Truck Roy, are you there?
I am.
Have you noticed White Genocide Project? You've been there lately?
I've been there briefly a couple times, but I'm not all that familiar with it. I've seen a lot of people mention the stalwart thing, and I wasn't really familiar with what that was about.
Oh, well, he just explained it. It's about the petition drive. The petition drive to make the president address white genocide.
Well, you've got a promoter of that on Stormfront that's pretty persistent, and I'm just about ready to sign up for that just because he won't go away.
Yeah, that's that's HD. Yeah, that is the stalwarts. And basically, at the first of the month, if you go to whitegenocideproject.com, you guys can go there, and on the right-hand side, you're going to see a little thing bouncing around there, little stars, and it's blue and blue and gold. It says "Party Down with the Stalwarts," and you click that, and it explains everything. It's how to sign up to sign the petitions at the White House for fighting white genocide. And there's all kinds of fun stuff up there. We've carried them on White Genocide or WhiteRabbitRadio.net quite a bit. At the first of the month, we put up the links. I tweet out the links as much as. Much as I can, especially when he emails me to remind me. But the May 2014 messages for the White House to respond to, and these are rather entertaining. Let's see here. We the people apologize for appointing anti-white Justice Sotomayor to the Supreme Court, defund our state religion, the Church of Political Correctness, whose dogma is white genocide. Now, that's something to sign up for.
Yeah, and I'm going to. I'm making a stand right here on this show. I'm going to sign up and start doing those petitions every month. You know, I talk about white genocide a lot when I'm doing the show with Don Black over on Stormfront Radio. And I think a lot of people, from the feedback I get sometimes, have a misconception that the white genocide idea is kind of an all hope is lost or, you know, some sort of whining thing, but it's actually a very, very aggressive charge that puts the opposition on their heels. And you know, if we can get into that mindset, and that's one of the reasons why I like listening to you and Beefcake, you guys have both been on the show, is that you're very aggressive with it, and you use it as a charge, not a complaint.
Well, what they've done is they've wielded terms like racist, white supremacist, and all this other type of stuff. They basically wielded it like a sword over a population as if they have moral authority. You know, it's like the divine right of the anti-whites. They have moral authority, they're God, and their God is a righteous anti-white God. And what we're saying is it's immoral. What they're pushing is genocide. It's kind of like the emperor has no clothes, and we're just bringing attention to it. It is an unworkable white genocide. I'll announce this right now. It is unworkable. It's in the failure stages. How it fails, we don't yet know. We're just going to keep pushing, but it's in failure stage right now. It's unworkable. The anti-white proposition, there can be no all-white countries anywhere, and there can be no all-white areas into otherwise all-white countries. It's become so extreme that time and time again, they're having to go broader and broader. Now, of course, the SPLC, you've got all these Christian groups complaining because anyone white and Christian is a racist or white supremacist or a Klansman. But that's how it's been all along. They're just now figuring it out. Beefcake, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. When everyone calls white genocide a conspiracy theory, it's the worst-kept conspiracy in the entire world.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I don't really hear anybody ever try to deny white genocide. They most of the time they just try to justify it. They try to say, well, you know, white people did this or white people did that, and try to take moral authority that way. And I think, what would you say, Beefcake? What's the best way to come back at that?
If they try justifying white genocide, I would just tell them, well, thank you very much. You're justifying genocide. You just declared an entire race of people are evil, that my people are somehow guilty, and that my children are guilty for all the evil acts of history, and you're rationalizing policies that you know would turn my people into a minority in our own ancestral countries. I said, what that is genocide. You are advocating genocide. You know, usually then they still do try going over to the whole idea that genocide's impossible. When they say race doesn't exist, what they're really trying to say is that genocide is impossible. And if they try saying race doesn't exist, you know, I was actually at a conversation with an anti-white earlier today, and I said, so in other words, when somebody says white people took the Indians' land, you jump up and scream race doesn't exist? Really?
Yeah, it's just race certainly exists when it comes down to who gets affirmative action, and race certainly exists when it comes down to who's to blame for all the world's problems. But anytime you get in a conversation with them, all of a sudden they have Alzheimer's and regarding there's no such thing as white people. You know, they don't know who's white. They have Alzheimer's all of a sudden. It's one of the conundrums.
Well, both you guys are smart guys. I got a question for you. How come it's easier for someone to get onto Stormfront and you know, talk about news and Jews and maybe go home and stockpile ammo and things like that, yet people don't have the courage to go out and publicly speak out against genocide, which, you know, it seems to be that's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, genocide is wrong by just about everybody's moral code.
Well, it starts small. I mean, this type of thing starts exactly where it began. It starts small. They have to start defending themselves for being white, and they have to start simple. You have to start with really simple things. It's kind of like Nick Griffin from the BNP tweeted out, anti-racism is code word for anti-white. Simple things like that. You've got to start small. You know, starting out, walking out, and putting up a 50,000 square foot flying billboard in your city would probably not be the best way to start. You want to start small and start something duplicatable, just defending yourself for being white with a consistent message. What happens a lot of times in this particular struggle is they look at dissidents with all these books and all these accomplishments, and then they you know, obviously that's a lot to shoot for. It's a lot to shoot for. So you have to start small. You have to start where you're at. You know, typically when it comes down to ammo, when it comes down to preparations, these are things white people automatically do. They're easy to do. And when it comes down to reading the news, these are things everyone does. What everyone has to get back to doing is back into the point of programming where it all broke down. And that's when someone calls you a racist, use a consistent message. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. And more will start doing that, as well as doing all the other white preparations. We just have to include defending themselves for being white, but start small. Start defending yourself, and then, of course, the next step is to start talking about genocide, white genocide.
Well, I've got a question specifically for Beefcake here, because we had a conversation before you came on Don's radio show a few months back, And you asked me a question. You asked about the tone of my podcast that I'd done and stuff. And you remarked that once Horace came along, it seemed like I completely changed my tone. And it's absolutely true. You know, I was the typical kind of all hope is lost sort of guy. You know, I'm going to fight to the bitter end, but we're probably going to lose anyway. And now I've become a lot more positive. You know, a few days ago on the show, last Friday actually, I did a 5 for Friday, 5 reasons why white genocide will fail. And the number one reason being because we're talking about it. And you know that's gives the perspective that we're using the genocide charge as a weapon, as a sword to go out there and hit the enemy with, rather than just giving in to the inevitable or anything like that. And your podcast really has impacted me, Horace. I listened to it many, many times, especially the free ones, especially the first few, and it's changed my worldview. My question to you, Beefcake, is what about yourself? Did you always, I mean, when I hear you, you're real aggressive, you're real confident. Did you always have that worldview towards racial issues and that kind of positive, aggressive attitude, or did the mantra help turn things around for you as well?
It did help turn things around. I will say that. I was kind of I want to say all hope is lost. I was kind of in a denial of all hope is lost. But you can deny something and still have it eating at you for a long time. And I was kind of, frustrated, anxiety, you know, that kind of feeling of the pit of your stomach if you're about to go into a situation that you don't like when it came to talking about anything about race. I didn't know how to discuss it, but I'm naturally a very argumentative guy. You know, maybe if I should thank anyone for that aggressive aggression in arguing and grabbing for moral authority. My first marriage was really, really terrible, and my ex-wife and I used to argue all the time and it was always about who's right and wrong. So maybe she taught me how to do that. Maybe I should give her some credit. But I didn't know how, you know, but even if you're an aggressive arguer and you just like to get in there and you like to keep things on the point and rub a point in someone's face and basically, no, you did this, you're the one that did this and someone's doing the same to you. And some people are comfortable doing that, but you have to actually have something to charge someone with. You actually have to be able to say what you're doing is in the moral wrong and this is why. And to keep bringing it back to that, and they can bring up anything else, come and say that doesn't change the fact that you're supporting this. That doesn't change the fact that you did this, you know. And if you don't know how to talk about white genocide, you don't have the actual, you know, you can know how to swing a sword all you want, but if all you have is a little wooden stick, it's not going to do you very much good. Well, we had somebody craft a very, very nice weapon for us with the mantra. That was Bob who put it together, and when I heard you guys talking about it on one of your podcasts, it was actually one of the Truck Roy shows, and I instantly thought, that's it right there. When I heard it, it hit me, and it was like that. That's what I need when I'm dealing with people that are saying, you know, nasty things about white people. These people are actually promoting genocide, and you can't really have a nastier charged on you than you know, genocide, but that is what it is. And there were times I would notice that, you know, our people are in a situation where essentially, you know, you don't have any exclusive place for your people to live that's large enough to sustain your people long term, and over time that will just lead to enough intermarriage and interbreeding to blend your people out of existence, not to mention all the, you know, very degrading things you see towards white people on our media, a lot of psychological warfare that's being done. And it's hard to be able to discuss that with only looking at the puzzle pieces. You know, well, I don't like this in movies because they portray white men as bumbling fools and idiots, and they try to make us look as unattractive as possible, and they try to, you know, be constantly bringing up bad things that were done in history and exaggerating them whenever they can. And if you get into that, you're just talking about one of those subject lines, and it's not really bringing up the main point. Or if you try talking about a situation that would lead to a world without white people without being able to call it a crime, everybody will just say, well, that's natural selection. You're a failed evolutionary experiment. Okay? And the thing is, you need to be able to actually have something to charge them back with, to be able to say, no, this is what you're supporting. You're supporting white genocide. And so I'm a naturally argumentative person, but I didn't actually have the tools to go into this fight. I mean, you can be a great boxer, but if you want to get into a fight with a dude who's 7 feet and 400 pounds and he's left-handed, you better come in armed with something. And that's what the mantra did, was it basically just gave me a tool, you know, that golden whistle, as Horace, as you called it before.
Oh, yeah, I steal Horace's terminology and subject matter off of his podcast just all the time on the Stormfront show.
And we encourage it. In fact,
yes.
We hear people use our stuff. If we hear someone use something that we said, It is a matter of pride. It feels that's where the pride is when you're fighting white genocide. We don't go around talking about white pride. We take pride in it when other people use our message of white genocide or anything that relates to what we say. You know, I want to toot my horn here, but I believe I was the first person to say forced assimilation. I think as far as I recall, I was the first one to say that. And every time I hear somebody say forced assimilation, I'm like, yes, they're using it.
Yeah, another thing that struck me about the way people are using the mantra and the talking points is, even when I'm directly ripping off metaphors and stuff that Horace has used, I never give him credit. And just like you'll never get credit for that forced thing. And I use that
all
the time.
Use it and love it. And,
right.
And, in fact, I will toot my own horn on that. Forced assimilation came from Beefcake. Use it happily and don't give me credit.
Right.
There we go.
Right.
We practice what we preach. There you go. That's the way it works. And it generates a great deal of loyalty, too. If you help out someone on message, or they're helping you out on message, and they don't take credit or you don't take credit, it generates a great deal of loyalty. I know there's some people that I've helped out on message around the planet and done various different things for them, and never even got credit for it, and most people don't even know I've done it, and I don't even really care, but it has generated a lot of loyalty. Like, wow, you guys actually do that, something most people don't do.
Yeah, you know, one thing, of course, that I've found out using it in practical politics is that if you give credit or you try to associate the talking points with somebody or with some organization, it dilutes it a little bit. It gives the enemy something else to grab a hold of because they can't handle the message itself. And so,
yeah, they want to associate it with something.
Right. And if you can, if it's just out there where they have to deal with it and there's nothing else for them to get a hold of, sometimes I'll see them thrash about. I have a situation here locally where I have some anti-whites, and they'll write letters into the editor, and they're fighting against the talking points because they're out there in my area here. But a lot of times they can't really associate them with anybody. And
they just want to yell Klan or white supremacy.
Yeah, or they'll even, you know, say Google Bob Whitaker or whatever, you know. And I don't, you know, this guy's evil, and I don't even want to
Google evil.
right, and. And it cracks me up because it reminds me of like a fish on a hook. You know, they're just thrashing about and they can't get away from it. And, you know, sometimes I feel like, you know, maybe I should write my own letter into the editor or something like that. And then I step back and I go, no, you know, the message is working and they're on the hook and they just can't get loose of it. You know, don't give them any way to get off of it by saying anything. Just let those talking points, you know, continue to eat.
They expose themselves afterwards. That's something I actually mentioned on Beefcake's Boot Camp, is that we don't have to win arguments with the anti-whites per se. What you really do is you essentially, this person's a genocidal maniac. They're like a ghoul. Your talking points are designed to draw them out into the light. You drag them into the light, and everybody can see they're a ghoul.
Right. I think the when it finally clicked home to me is listening again to Horace's podcast, when he says, when they start to deny it, when they say there is no such thing as white genocide or whatever, you've won. At that point, you can just kind of step back and let them do that denial thing because it will never work. It's never worked.
I'm not an anti-white, but.
right. Or, you know, there is no such thing as white genocide and da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, at that point, they've already done your job for you. You can just sit back and watch it work.
It has an effect. Some people, it takes a while to hit them too. That reminds me of two things when I just said that. But one thing I wanted to say is that a lot of times when they're reaching for things, like they're trying to reach for something to deny it with, when they get to that point, There's another repeater that I've seen used that's another one I love when people see, because it was there are certain things anti-whites will say that when all you have to do is, if you've internalized the message and you remember, it all ties back to them somehow justifying the conditions that lead to a world without white people. Everything they say does. There was one that was a funny little hang-up, and a lot of times it's something very concise that just makes their whole – everything they're trying to use to deny it fall apart. And one of those was when they say, well, you know, they acknowledge the situation. They acknowledge white people aren't allowed to have a home under the current system, and that they're vilified by it, you know, or because of it whenever we point out that we're the only group of people that have the whole top of the planet, but we don't have a home. And they'll say, well, I realize that the situation would lead to, you know, this and this, and there aren't any places for only us to live, but people can just choose to marry their own people. You know, nobody's being forced to reproduce with somebody who isn't white. No one's being forced to interbreed. The answer is no. They're forcing the conditions that lead to it.
Yeah, so you're saying if Hitler took all the male Jews and sent them to one country in Africa and took all the female Jews and sent them to one country in South America, somehow that wouldn't be genocide? You know, well, they have freedom of association. They can marry whoever they want.
Right. And so they're forcing the conditions that lead to it. And that's really simple. You know, you say, yeah, they might not be forcing anyone to intermarry. They're forcing the conditions that lead to it. That's our point, is that the conditions leading to it are being forced. That's why it's genocide, you ding-a-ling.
Right.
You
well, know? It's actually much simpler than that. That's the social engineering programs post-World War II were designed specifically to genocide Indo-European children. That's the charge right there.
Yeah, that's white genocide in the nutshell.
There you go. It's all right.
And speaking of, and the other thing I was reminded of too when I said it, and it hit me, you know, was that we're talking about, you know, the message. It can take a while to sink in with people. There was a guy I've mentioned the podcast. I am former military. There was a guy I actually served with, and sometimes I open my mouth probably when it's not the safest thing for me to do physically, and he hit me. You know, a guy known for years when I mentioned white genocide, he's one of those neocon conservative types. You know, he loves listening to the Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity crowd. You know, he's always talking about whatever they're talking about on the talking heads on Fox News or whatever. And I told him the what white genocide is, and that all of these things come back to white genocide, to the social engineering designed to enforce conditions that lead to a world without white people, to blend us out of existence. And we went back and forth for a little bit, and he hit me. He actually punched me. He's a pretty strong guy. And we didn't talk for about a year, and then he calls me up on the phone, and he apologizes to me, and he says he can see it now. Because he was at, I think he said he was either at Target or Walmart, and he was walking around, he thought he was in another country. And then it hit him, you know, he said he only saw two white women when he was in there, and they both had carts with non-white kids in them. And then it hit him. He said, we're not going to exist anymore if this keeps happening. Then he remembered what I said.
Right.
It all clicked. But it took him a while for it to sink in. And then when he told me that, he told me he had actually kept up what I said. Before he called me, he actually was up in bed for several nights. Like, he didn't want to believe it. But basically, reality will that's the nice thing when you have the truth on the side of your message. Reality will literally come back and rub it in your face if you try to deny it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Horace is always saying we need a bigger microphone, and it's true. We need to turn up the volume on the message, but we won't ever have to reach the noise level of our enemy, because we are pushing legitimate associations. You know, we're making legitimate associations, and you need less microphones to, or megaphones to do that than if you're trying to push a lie. It takes a lot more volume to push a lie, and if any persistent truth can cut through that noise, then all the propaganda in the world won't keep that lie alive.
It takes more and more energy to push a lie. At first, it might be easy. It may take some slick marketing. It may take a lot of money. Things are always at our enemy's disposal, but a lie takes a tremendous amount of energy. Right now, all their energy is being exerted trying to enforce the anti-white proposition, trying to enforce white genocide. I mean, they can't allow any white areas. You can't allow any type of talk of this kind we're having here to happen at any level whatsoever. It just can't. It can't hold up to it because the contradictions are so profound. Forget about winning or losing arguments. The topic alone, what Beefcake just said, all he did was point out a contradiction. The guy at first got very aggressive, even assaulted him, and then realized sometime afterwards that it was 100% correct. And whites generally will when they start thinking about it.
Right. But, you know, it's amazing to me how conditioning works that they will react so aggressively to having a lie pointed out to them. I mean, they resent you for pointing it out.
They kill the messenger. That's you know, that's basically what
it's,
all
it's
comes
the
down
psychology
to.
Of the con. I've talked about this before. The first stage in the con, you get angry when someone tells you you've been ripped off and been conned.
Right.
You won't accept it at all. You get excited. You know, you're pissed off that someone told you that you've been conned or ripped off. You won't buy it. You won't accept it. The second stage is acceptance. And at that stage, you're willing to accept that, okay, I've been conned, I've been ripped off, I've been lied to. The guy that called me on the phone, and I gave him a credit card number for light bulbs, it was all scam. And then the third and final step is anger at the con artist. You've got to go through these stages. One of the problems for most pro-whites is they're in the final stage. They're angry at the con artist. Well, most of the population is always going to be in the first two stages. They're either in denying the con, in total denial, or they're accepting it. And at that stage, of course, we want them laughing. Want them to get them laughing. It's very good. Everyone will see this. Someone's been conned on some level. It could have been lied to by a girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife. Some kind of con on some level. And at some point, after they stop and sit and think about it, first they'll deny it. Then, of course, they're going to get a little upset. And then they're going to laugh at it. That's very healthy. It's very healthy.
Right. And if you look at history, I was also going to point out, as far as people getting violent about things they disagree with, if you look at history, you know, and from what we know about history, I mean, our enemies lie to us about that enough. I'm convinced of that. But the thing is, as a people, as white people, we innately want to do the right thing. And you can really get people riled up a lot when they believe they're in the moral right. You know, we have a lot of ability for empathy. We naturally care about other people, but ultimately, we want to do the right thing, and that wanting to do what is morally correct usually overrides our natural sense of empathy. And what can happen is when somebody feels they're in the moral right to try silencing somebody by force because what the person is saying is so wrong morally in their eyes, they will, unfortunately, that is one of the risks you take if you're going to say something that's unpopular to say. And that goes back to that initial question you had, Truck Roy, about why, you know, you'll find people that will basically make bunkers in their bottom of their homes and can go online in a friendly environment where other people generally agree with what they're saying and say things, but why it's so hard to get people to say, to point out a truth that's unpopular to say. They instinctively, they're concerned about their own hide, basically, because they know that when people hear something they don't like, you know, when they're denying that con at first, that first stage definitely is anger, especially if they've been taught that the moral thing to do is to attack somebody who commits heresy.
Well, I can understand that, but I got a question for you, Horace. What's the psychology then behind the guy that's pro-white, that's on Stormfront and talks about all the conspiracies and this and that, why is he so resistant to just pointing out a simple truth like white genocide?
Well, most of them, you know, they get involved in activism for various different reasons. And it doesn't matter what type of activism you're dealing with. When you're dealing with the violent activists right now in North America, in reality, you're dealing with white activists, but you're not dealing with anything pro-white. You're dealing with environmental activists. They're like the number one terrorist threat, according to the FBI. Ecotage, eco-terrorism. I was talking about this in Endgame Exotica. And when people get involved in activism for various different reasons, usually just fulfill some need. And one of the challenges, of course, with pro-white activists, they tend to be highly educated. They tend to talk at a college or above level. Most good propaganda is usually at an eighth grade or ninth grade level or lower. It doesn't interest them because, one, they didn't come up with it. And, two, it's talking about the same thing or being on a consistent message is more of an art form than a science. And it didn't interest me until I realized the power that was in it, and it didn't interest me until I realized that I was arguing with robots most of the time. It's a waste of time. So, you know, if people get involved in things like this for various different reasons, but it's always to fulfill a need, and that need might not be winning at all.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think a lot of times people that get involved, say, on any given pro-white website, are not in the mood for going out and talking with someone who doesn't agree with them. They'd rather stay and talk with, you know, about the details of a conspiracy or something, and argue about the finer points of something that they all pretty much agree on, than go out and go head to head with somebody who's, you know, violently or passionately anti-white.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things. You know, some people want to write books. Some people want to talk. Some people are looking for some sense of community. Some people just want to fight the enemy.
And those are the people we're looking for, right? Like BP.
They are. But at the same time, those people, we want things that are duplicatable, that we're the average. You know, even if someone just wants to write a book, understand that most of the things that they're capable of doing are unduplicatable. But if you take something that even a 5-year-old can do to defend themselves from being white, that's going to give you a tremendous amount of power in society to sell your books.
Right.
And so it's kind of like a little bit broader approach to see things. But, you know, we assume, you know, it's kind of like the fall of the Soviet Union. You would assume all the dissidents wanted the Berlin Wall to come down. But the fact of the matter is, it scared them to death. They didn't know what life was going to be like living without it, you know. Just because they say they're dissidents and they say they want the Soviet Union brought down doesn't mean they actually do. You know, they all had different needs and different particular agendas, and that's what you get into. And a lot of them don't like using anything they don't come up with personally. You know, you've got all these young guys and gals on Stormfront who will come up with the answer to all the solution, the answer to all the riddles. And they're capable of doing it, too. But they don't want to use anyone else's type of consistent message. It's just common. And in dissonant circles, typically if you use someone's book or use someone's quote, you give them credit. You know, if you use Dr. David Duke's book or you quote his book, you give him credit. If you use, if you read a speech or read over a speech by Sam Dixon, you're going to give him credit. That's the way dissonant circles work. That's the way everything works. Practical politics is the antithesis of that. It's about taking and using something as if you own it. And it's something to get used to. It's more of kind of like washing out most of the stuff you've learned and starting over again. It's a whole different world. And when you're dealing with psychological warfare, you're dealing with a whole other subset altogether. So it's kind of, you know, it's just one of those things. More and more will do it because more and more will see it's working. And they'll see it for what it is. It's just a way to, help the population to overcome this particular stage.
Beefcake, in your experience, and I know you do a lot of activism out on the web and in the public, do you think that when we start using tactics that are successful and that you can basically day in and day out kick somebody's butt with these talking points verbally, do you think that attracts a different sort of person than what historically the average pro-white dissident has been?
I think there's going to be some overlap, but I also think it will bring in a new crowd as well. I think there are, and I think that there are some people that truly just want a sense of community and want to know that other people see the same problems they do. That is what I suspect a lot of people are on sites like Stormfront for, is that they're there because they, in their day-to-day lives, they see everyone walking around as brainwashed, conditioned, very heavily, and they're so tired of dealing with it that for them it makes them rest easier at night, knowing they're not the only person in the world that sees these things. But then you also have the people that want to be vocal. They want to get in there and they want to point out the contradictions, and they want other people to see it. And I do believe that there are, and you've gone into this before, there are people that are naturally activist mindset, and they're the same ones that you see out there. And you will find them in the pro-white circles right now. However, I think that it's a very mixed bag. So I will get some of them, but I think we're also going to get quite a few from the larger population. Obviously, being pro-white in any capacity, you're in the minority, you know, right now. But there are a lot of white people that will go and crawl through the nastiest jungle and have all sorts of parasites they got to be treated for after their 6-month trip, where they're emaciated when they come back, because they're trying to save some sort of tree frog. Okay, to them, it is so important to do something morally good when they see something that is, in their, to them, reprehensible happening, and they just can't sleep at night worrying about that tree frog. And, you know, these horrible, evil people, guilty for all the crimes of history, would do that. If that's in their nature, that's a contradiction right there. But back to that point, you know, you have people out there that are fighting to save trees that are actually farmed, you know, and grown in 20-year cycles just to be used over and over again. And you got people out there fighting for that, and they're fighting for all these things that they've been told through a lot of conditioning are the right thing to do, that when it takes a bit to sink in that what they believe in from a racial sense has actually been wrong. And they, and you know, at first they really want to deny that con. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the anti-whites, the low-level, heavily conditioned anti-whites that we've clashed into, there are some of the most vocal anti-whites you'll find on a lot of the on a lot of the internet. You know, we own the internet. Team pro-white, we have the internet in any capacity. But we find a lot of people come in wanting to argue, and these are, I believe these are the people of the mindset of people that want to be vocal. But right now, they're still in that stage of waking up to the con. They're in that first stage. They're getting angry at the message. And once that sinks in, once they're laughing at it, and once they're mad at the messenger, then I think you're going to see sort of a spin on it where it does a 180, and you see a lot of these people saying, oh my God, I can't believe I was fighting for something that would destroy my entire people, and that all of a sudden become very vocal about it. You know, I'm sure that some of the people that we have on the swarm probably had anti-white sentiments at some time in their life because they believed it was morally right until they realized what they actually purchased.
Yep.
And I think we're going to get a lot of that, and we're going to get a lot of those people that naturally just want to be out there doing what they see as the right thing, that are out there for a variety of other causes right now. Once they find this out, you know, they want to fight for what is the biggest cause in their mind. And one thing I'll say that a lot of them will come to the conclusion of is anything that matters. That guy that wants to save the tree frog, guess what? Without white people, that tree frog is history. Because nobody else besides a white rabbit is going to go crawl on his hands and knees through muck and parasites to go save a tree frog. You know, nobody cares about that. If you, anything that is important to your race that you want to exist in the future, and you start seeing things from any sort of a racial standpoint at all, you realize that your race needs to survive long term in order to see whatever those other things that are important to you survive long term.
Interesting. And 100% correct. We are now, of course, going to wrap this up after that great, great episode by Beefcake. And you guys are all invited to go to whitegenocideproject.com and listen to Beefcake's boot camp, as well as become a Rockin' Robin and get on the actual, stalwarts. Look at the right-hand column and get on and become a stalwart to get on the White House website and make them address white genocide. And the last point I'm going to make is at the first of Follow the White Horse, Avengers Follow the White Rabbit, which was about 5 years ago. The website, it came out right around 2010, but the podcast precedes the website by about a year roughly. And my target audience, of course, is not necessarily Stormfront, is not necessarily, quote-unquote, the traditional audience that most of the listeners would actually hear a podcast be geared for among a pro-white audience. In other words, if you go to some of these other websites and you listen to a podcast, Follow the White Rabbit is radically, radically different than that. My target audience is basically white and normal and alternative news listeners. And we've now plunged into the heart of that audience with our last did it before on Rents.com, but have now done it in a lot larger way on Red Ice Creations based on the feedback. And that audience, to answer the Truck Roy question once again, the pro-white audience on Stormfront, posting on Stormfront, you know, are basically white, and they know there's a problem, and they think they know exactly how to address the problem. And some of them may. They're not necessarily open to other solutions because they have that dissident mindset. Whereas when you get on the Red Ice Creations, you get into the target audience, you're dealing with something white, they know there's a problem, which is good. And they know where the problem is emanating from, the top of Western civilization, that's even better. And they're quite willing to look at even radical theories on what to do or what not to do or where this is going. And they have a very much an open mind. And that has been has surprised many the type of feedback they've seen from that particular show. I know I get Bugsters emailing me or other listeners that have heard other guests come on that show talking about white genocide since then. and these allusions to it. Typically, if you go on a pro-white show, the last thing they're going to do on the next show is talk about white genocide necessarily. They're usually going to talk about something else because that is how dissidents work. They want to talk about their own particular work, their particular books and that type of thing. It's just a totally different mindset. But that target audience has delivered so much. They brought the global warming as a hoax, that meme that brought the elite so much trouble. That pretty much worked its magic in this particular group, in this alternative news sector, this all-white alternative news sector. And you can bring the elites to their knees very quickly with one little simple meme. One little simple meme. And that's what we're looking to do with white genocide. Anything else to add, Truck Roy?
No, that's it, man. I think we nailed it, and I'm always inspired coming on with you guys, and I know tomorrow I'm going to come back on the regular show I do more on topic and more aggressive.
Well, it's good having you on, Beefcake. We'll look to have you on again.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys, and I look forward to hearing your future interviews with our other fantastic pro-whites on Message.
Yo, cheers.
Black Shadows Radio.